Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm here with two guests.
Very good.
They came for lunch, and I asked if they were willing to listen to the class, and they were very excited about it. So
okay.
We're here.
Has joined.
We'll go forward. Good afternoon, whoever arrived. So, we'll start with L'Shem Yehud. The class can be found on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix in row 6, the third column from the left. When that landing page opens up, scroll down to the bottom of the Sefer Yehoshua, and you'll see one link for the Sefer Judges or the Sefer Shoftim. When the Sefer Judges page opens up, the first thing you'll see is a link to the Mechon Mamre website for the Book of Judges, and I recommend you open that, although I'm not sure that we'll be able to get to it today. L'Shem Yehud Kud Shabarichu Ishkinte Bidkilu Urchimu Udkilu Udkilu Urchimu Le'akta L'Shem Yud He Bavavhe V'Yehuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'Sok Torah Mitzvah Vaihino Amadunai Elohinu Aleinu Maasei Yadenu Karenei Aleinu Maasei Yadenu Karenehu. The Book of Judges Commentary. The ideas expressed here are from various sources. There will be commentaries from myself as well, and they will be clearly identified. We utilize a website to read the sources known as the Mechon Mamre. And I am adding, it is important to realize, according to the teachings of the sages, two things. Each verse we read has 70 explanations. Each verse applies to us in this generation. Introductory commentary to the Sefer Shoftim, and the word Shoftim means judges. And as an aside or initial commentary from myself, the Book of Judges means that there wasn't a lengthy leader. There wasn't a leader who went through a lot of time. There were different judges over the 300 years that this book covers. But each situation related to the people were falling further away from Hashem through their actions. And as they fell further away from Hashem, Hashem sent a judge to bring them back, bring them closer to him. So the cycle was the people would lose contact with what Moses had taught them and Joshua had taught them. So they would move away from Hashem. And then when Hashem felt it was far enough that they'd moved, he would send another nation, one of the 70 nations, to disturb them. And that disturbance created the need for Hashem to send a judge. The introduction to the Sefer Shoftim. After Joshua's death, the tribes of Israel continue their conquest of the southern regions of Canaan, but they are unable to cleanse the land thoroughly of its native inhabitants. Hashem declares that these remaining people will be an impediment to Israel's enjoyment of the promised land. Generations pass, and the younger Israelites turn away from Hashem, intermarrying with the Canaanites and worshiping the local deities. Hashem threatens to abandon Israel because of the disobedience of the youth, but he selects a series of judges or rulers to act as temporary leaders for the people. I am adding, did Hashem overtly choose the 12 people to become judges? Did the people use the Urim Betubim? Did the people follow righteous people in an unwritten agreement? Does Hashem provide a judge in the appearance, in the illusion, of someone rising to lead the nation? How did the people choose the judges? How did they become aware of the need for a leader? As we read each judge's story, you're going to find these questions needing to be answered. The Judge Devorah summary. A prophet named Devorah emerges as Israel's new judge after Israel returns to evil and is invaded by a mighty army from the north. Counseling Israel's tribes under a great tree, she calls for an insurrection. And together with Hashem's help, the Israelites defeat the king's 900 chariots, sending the Canaanite general Sisera into retreat. When Sisera seeks refuge in a local woman's tent, the owner, Yael, lures Sisera to sleep and kills him, hammering a peg into his skull. Devorah recounts the victory in a lengthy song, extolling Hashem as a warrior and herself as the mother in Israel. This is an unwritten commentary. This is obviously a summary of the story of Devorah. There's a lot of details missing. But the real question is, how comfortable do you think the men of that generation were following the dictates of a woman? Not out of chauvinism, although that could be. But why was the generation needing a woman to be the judge rather than a man? Judge Gideon summary. Hashem commissions a humble man, Gideon, to save Israel from its next invaders, the Midianites, who impoverish and scatter the people. Gideon tears down his father's altar to the Baal, one of the idols. And Israelites respond in droves to his call to fight. Hashem demands fewer men for the battle, and in a test, Gideon leads the men to a river to drink. Those who cup their hands to drink are sent home, and the remaining 300 men who lap the water with their tongues are chosen for Hashem's army. Spying on the enemy troops at night, Gideon overhears a Midianite soldier tell his friend about a dream in which a small loaf of bread was able to knock down a large Midianite tent. The friend interprets the dream as a sign that Midian will be defeated by Israel. Gideon and his few men surround the camps, and with the sound of trumpets and broken jars, the Israelites emit such a clamorous war cry that the Midianites turn and slay each other. Israel attempts to make Gideon its king, but Gideon refuses, proclaiming that Hashem alone is ruler of Israel. The Judge Jephthah summary. Widespread worship of the idol Baal plagues Israel, and Gideon's son Abimelech serves a violent 3-year reign as Israel's king. His tyrannical reign ends when a woman throws a millstone on Abimelech's head. Pressured by the Philistines from the east and the Ammonites from the west, Israel turns from its idol worship, and Hashem selects a new judge, Jephthah, the son of a prostitute, to challenge the Ammonites. Jephthah promises Hashem that if he is victorious, he will sacrifice to Hashem the first thing that comes out of his house, the day he returns from battle. Upon devastating the Ammonites, Jephthah returns home to see his daughter emerge from his house, dancing to greet him. Jephthah laments his promise, but his daughter encourages him to remain faithful to Hashem, and Jephthah kills the virgin girl. This summary is not complete. The real issue was, Jephthah made this vow. It could have been annulled. The high priest in Israel at that time was Pinchas of the famous in the book of Numbers. Pinchas killed Cozbi and Shimri. And Pinchas became a priest. So he ultimately elevated to the high priest. And he is the person who is required to annul the vow that Jephthah made. But Jephthah refused to go to Pinchas, and Pinchas refused to go to Jephthah, and thus the daughter died. That's really the story that we will study. Judge Samson summary. The Philistines continue to oppress Israel, and the angel of Hashem appears to a childless Israelite couple, promising them a son who will become Israel's next deliverer. The couple raises their son, Samson, as a Nazarite, a person who symbolizes his devotion to Hashem by never cutting his hair. Hashem blesses Samson with exceptional abilities, and one day Samson kills a lion with his bare hands. Contrary to his parents' urging, Samson chooses a Philistine woman to be his wife. During the wedding ceremony, he baffles the Philistines with a riddle, the answer to which they discover only when Samson's wife reveals the answer to them. Samson burns with anger and goes home without his wife. But when he returns to retrieve her, the Philistines have given her to another man. Samson captures 300 foxes and ties torches to each of their tails, setting the Philistine crops ablaze. When the Philistines pursue Samson, the Israelites hand him over to his enemies, bound at the wrist. With Hashem's power, Samson breaks his bindings and uses the jawbone of a donkey to kill 1,000 Philistine men. Again, Samson falls in love with a Philistine woman, Delilah. The Philistine officials urge Delilah to discover the secret of Samson's strength. 3 times Delilah asks Samson the source of his power, and Samson lies to her each time, duping the officials in their attempts to subdue him. After a while, Samson tells her the truth, informing her that his long hair is the source of his strength. While Samson is asleep, Delilah has his hair cut and alerts the officials, who capture him and gouge out his eyes. In prison, Samson's hair begins to grow again, and during a Philistine religious festival, the blind Samson is brought out to entertain the crowds. Samson asks his servant to guide him to the pillars of the arena, and crying out to Hashem, Samson knocks down the pillars of the temple, killing the Philistine rulers. Judge Strongman summary. Without a judge, Israel becomes even more corrupt. One day, a man and his concubine are accosted while spending the night in the Israelite tribe of Benjamin, when a gang of Benjamite men demand to have sex with the man. He offers them his concubine instead, and the men rape her repeatedly, Chas v'shalom, throughout the night, until she dies. Enraged, the man brings the concubine home and cuts her into 12 pieces, sending a piece to each of the 12 tribes of Israel as a symbol of Israel's corruption. The rest of Israel rallies together in opposition to the tribe of Benjamin, and with Hashem's help, the united tribes kill more than 25,000 Benjamites. Israel grieves for its lost tribe and helps the remaining Benjamites repopulate their land. This story of this judge, there's a lot of other stories that come out of it about Tu B'Av, about the women going out in white borrowed clothes to seduce their men so they will become married and to repopulate the tribe of Benjamin. That's a story from the Midrash. There's a whole range of ideas. But each of these summaries are teaching us. We have to ask the questions. Why was this judge chosen with this background? Because it's always about keneged. It'll come back to me. It's a three Hebrew word phrase. That translates as measure for measure. And each of these stories have to be looked into in a deeper level. And each of these stories are relating to our generation. There are groups of people that these stories apply to, but it doesn't apply to every person in the generation. Per se. Yes, it does apply to every person in the generation. but it's more applicable to a group of people. Now, here's my written commentary. After reading the above summaries, one needs to ask questions. What does one learn about character traits from the names and the stories? Which tribe does each judge come from? How does that add to our understanding of the character traits? Three times in this sefer, the phrase, "the people did what was good in their eyes," is used. What is learned from this phrase and from each of the three times? Now we've looked at the summary. Now let's look at a little deeper at something called the analysis. Biblical scholars typically group the books of Joshua and Judges together, noting how well the two works complement each other. On the one hand, Joshua purports to tell a chronological history of the Hebrew conquest of Canaan, but the account in the conquest itself seems too perfect to be accurate. In contrast, Judges is a compilation of myths about the early years of the Israelite settlement. While the stories are indeed fanciful, they suggest a gradual and disjointed occupation of the Promised Land that is probably more true to history than the Book of Joshua. While Joshua provides a methodical description of the various pit battles and the explanation of the distribution of land, Judges reveals the stories that the Israelite conquerors told as they gradually took over. These individual accounts of Israel's judges are myths in the true sense of the word, not because they are false, but because they are important to early Hebrew culture. The central theme of these myths is heroic struggle, chiefly of marginalized or oppressed people. The Israelites in the book of Judges are strangers in a land they have recently conquered, and they are pressured from all sides by powerful regimes. Israel's judges manifest the virtues of this marginalized status. Jephthah is the son of a prostitute. The narrator takes pains to note that Ehud is left-handed, and it is this characteristic that enables Ehud to draw his sword and kill the Moabite king by surprise. Even more important than Deborah as a female hero is Yael, who uses the pretense of feminine warmth to draw a great commander into her tent, comforting him before she kills him. The myth of Samson may be more appropriately described as an epic, because it is a relatively long story concerning the development of a single extraordinary hero, who it might be said is a metaphor for ancient Israel itself. Samson epitomizes some interesting dualities: brute nature versus civilized culture, strength versus weakness, Hebrew versus Philistine. What is unique to this story and to Judges as a whole is that, unlike earlier books, the struggle between these opposing forces does not serve to develop either or person. For Samson, the line between
has joined
is blurred. Samson, defined more by his identity as a Nazarite, is a displaced man roaming back and forth between his home and Philistine. falling in love with Philistine women, yet terrorizing the Philistines, and eventually suffering betrayal by the Israelites in return. It is only when Samson destroys the temple, crying out, "Let me die with the Philistines," that Israel is saved through Samson's service. The epic of Samson shows that Israel's struggle and its salvation consists less of cleansing foreign influences from the land than of grappling with those influences while remaining faithful to Hashem. And that is the idea of how does modern Jewish society struggle with the same concept of how to be separate from the society around you and yet still be faithful to Hashem . Stories in Judges are filled with extreme violence. This violence may cause us to question how Hashem can be good if the greater part of the tribe of Benjamin is killed to make a religious point. Or if Jephthah must keep his promise to Hashem by killing his daughter. One answer is that the abundant violence in Israel is not due to God's wrath, but to Israel's wickedness. Israel promiscuously worships other gods and insists on returning to evil despite God's help. Another more subtle answer is that death in Judges is not always an absolute evil, but is at times a thing of beauty. The tales in Judges begin to develop the notion of sacrifice. The idea that one person's death can be meaningful to another person for religious or ethical reasons. Samson's death saves Israel from Philistine persecution, and Sisera's death at Yael's hands is a poignant symbol of Israel's victory to be celebrated in song. The writer tells us that the sacrifice of Jephthah's virgin daughter becomes a tradition among the Israelites, an annual celebration of the story by adolescent girls to symbolize passage from innocence into womanhood. Rather than continue with this summary that comes from the Zamra.com and the analysis, it's both a summary and an analysis, let us begin to read the first chapter of the book of Judges. There are 36 verses in the first chapter. Give me a minute to verify that, but that's what my memory is saying. Yes, 36 verses. We know that the number 36 connects to Tzaddikim, as there are 36 revealed Tzaddikim in the world at all times, and 36 concealed Tzaddikim at all times. Do not expect that the book of Judges will be chronological. That's what we read earlier as part of the analysis. It's not chronological. It jumps around. So it can be confusing, and we will try and keep it unconfused. But feel free to ask questions about the chronology. I may not be able to answer, but we can always make the effort to look it up. Verse 1. Vayehi achare mot Yehoshua vayishalu b'nei Yisrael v'adonai yohe vahe adanu yo yo ahida wanu hey yo le Miyale lanu el hakanani batchila lehilachem bo. And it came to pass after the death of Joshua that the children of Israel asked Hashem, saying, "Who shall go up for us first against the Canaanites to fight against them?" There are 17 words in this first verse, indicating that the cycle of the chapter, the book of Judges itself, is part of God's plan. It's part of his goodness. Out of the pleasures of the physical world that we need to learn, the cycle of moving away from Hashem and then moving back closer to Hashem, always getting further away and then higher and closer, is part of God's plan, and we have to recognize that. And there are 68 letters in the first verse. The number 68 connects to the Hebrew word chayim, which is the plural of chai, meaning life, and chayim are lives, the plural of life. So the implication in this verse is that the children of Israel are using the Urim V'Tuvim to ask Hashem, who should be our leader as we need to combat the Canaanites? Verse 2. And Hashem said, "Judah will go up. Behold, I have delivered the land into his hand." Vayomer Adonai Yohe Wahe Adanu Yo Yohe Dawanu Heyo Yehuda Ya'ale Hine Natati Et Haaretz Beyado. So Hashem was putting into the minds of the children of Israel that Judah, being the king of the tribes, the leader of the tribes, should be from that tribe, should come the leader that will lead them to victory against the Canaanites. There are 9 words, and we know the number 9 can either be Yesod or Chokmah. Can be wise, or it can be creative. And creation, without wisdom is still creation. There are 35 letters. The number 35 is Lamed He. The Lamed means teacher. The He represents either the higher worlds of Yud and He, or the lower worlds of the physical world. Which way would you describe it? The words of the verse imply that there is a movement up the tree, and therefore it should be connecting to Chachma. The third verse.
Vayomer Yehuda l'Shimon Achi Vale Iti Begorali Vini Lachama Bakna Ani Vahalati Gamani Ika Begoralecha Vayelech Ito Shimon.
And Judah said unto Shimon his brother, come up with me into my lot, that we may fight against the Canaanites, and I likewise will go with thee into thy lot. So Shimon went with him. Now remember, Shimon does not have land of his own. He is spread, his people, the tribe of Shimon, is spread among the other tribes, because Shimon represents harsh judgment. So when Judah is saying to Shimon, come with me, he's inviting harsh judgment against the Canaanites. But there's a spiritual law. If you invite judgment into your life, like going to court, Hashem, the universe, is going to be judging your righteousness first. Again, we have 17 words, which connects to the goodness of Hashem through the gematria of the word Tov. The number 75 is the phrase Behachma, or the word Behachma, with wisdom, or in wisdom. So it's saying that Judah, by asking Shimon, was a wise action. The fourth verse. Verse 4.
Vayal Yehuda vayiten
Adonai Yohewahe Adanu Yo Yohahe Dawanu Heyo Ed Hakana Ani Ha 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 Breezy Beyadam Wayakum Bevezek Asaret Alafim Ish. And Yehuda went up, and Hashem delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand. And they smote of them in Bezek 10,000 men. The word Bezek has a gematria of 111. And that's the gematria of the letter Aleph, which means unity. So the Torah is hinting to us here that the process of Judah and Shimon coming together and fighting against the Canaanites and the Perizzites was literally a form of unification of the tribes and unification of the world. And that's also why it was 10,000 men, because the word Aleph means 1,000 as well as the number 1. It means 1,000. And 10 represents the 10 Sephirot. There are 13 words reinforcing the whole idea of the unity, because 13 is connected to Echad, which is oneness. The number 56 with the kolel is 57, and 57 is the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasa or sustenance. And so we are learning from this that the sustenance comes through unity. And we're going to just do one more verse. Vayimsu et Adoni bezek bezek vayilachamu bo vayaku et hakena ani. Excuse me. And they found Adoni Bezek in Bezek. And they fought against him, and they smote the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Now, the word Adoni means mister or master. It's the same spelling as Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, Adonai, one of the names of God. But it's always referring to human beings. And we have here the word Adoni Bezek, which is and 74. I'm not sure what the meaning of 174 is, other than I would see it as the word 74 represents witness, and 100 represents a stage of completion. So it's talking about this was a stage of completion in cleansing the land of the Canaanites and the Perizzites. There are 12 words which connect to the 12 tribes of Israel. And this is going to be a little bit different for you. There are 47 letters, which is Zion Mem. But anytime you have a Mem Sofit, you can substitute a Nun Sofit. And all of a sudden, the word becomes Zan, Zion Nun. And we know from the Anabakoa, Zan represents parnasah, or sustenance. And so we see that this victory is coming at a, as a process of parnasah, or sustenance. It's part of the process of cleansing the land step by step. We're going to stop here. We have enough time for questions, so if anybody has questions, please feel free to ask. While you're unmuting your phones, I'll remind you that we have two more classes today. One which will start at 4 o'clock West Coast time and will include the counting of the Omer as well as our Deep Zohar class. And our 7 o'clock class will be a Tikkuni Zohar class. Are there any questions? Without questions, we will just conclude the class and hope to see you next week, where we will continue with verse 6. Shalom Gadol to everyone. Have a beautiful afternoon and evening.
Shalom Gadol. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shalom Gadol. Thank you, Hanok.
Thank you all. Shalom.
Shalom. Thank you.